Hey everyone, this is John.
And this is Ryan.
And this is the Super Nintendo Show, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. And on this Super Nintendo edition of the Nintendo Show, we're going to talk all about Super Nintendo games.
That's fantastic.
Kind of semi-chronologically, and it is fantastic. So we actually got four games on tap here. Luffy and the Fortress of Doom is probably going to be our highlight one that I ramble on for quite a bit about. But we also got a game that you brought.
Yes.
Called
Weapon Lord.
Weapon Lord, yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you for bailing me out there. I forgot the name of it. But actually, that one's very apropos because it came out in December of 1993, which is 21 years ago from this month, which is kind of the way we do things, kind of in the semi-chronological order. Mm-hmm. As games turn 21, we talk about them.
Very good.
And also, kind of revisiting a couple of blind spots from November of 1993, Aladdin and Jurassic Park, which are two interesting cases, and we might as well kick off with these two, because they are licensed games, which is not, we don't talk about a whole lot, because generally they're not very good, but these ones are both pretty good, but they're also quite different from the Sega Genesis versions of games of the same name, which is what I base most of my knowledge of these games on.
Yeah.
I did not play a whole lot of the Super Nintendo version of these games, if any at all. Like Jurassic Park, I based everything on my knowledge of the Sega version, and as I was doing a little bit of research, it turns out Jurassic Park for the Super Nintendo is completely different.
Yeah. Well, this one is totally, for me, guided by the Genesis version as well.
Yeah.
Like, as you described it, it didn't make any sense, because I remember it being a side-scroller, you know.
Yes.
You have weapons, you fight dinosaurs.
You got, like, different types of grenades, you're going from, like, location to location, and working your way through these side-scrolling action sequences, and collecting health upgrades, and extra weapons, and
what you describe is, like, what, a top-down RPG, essentially?
It's a top-down sort of adventure game with a lot of action elements to it. But in like the vein of A Link to the Past.
Uh-huh.
So, and get this, it gets even crazier. When you go into buildings, as you do in this game, I guess sort of similar to going into a dungeon in A Link to the Past. Probably doesn't have the same scope of an A Link to the Past dungeon, but the concept is the same. You're in like this big open world, and you go into different buildings, and you complete different tasks in order to open up different areas and progress to try to escape the island. When you go into these buildings, you switch to a first-person mode.
What?
What?
That's insane.
It's crazy. Oh, and in this first-person mode, it is compatible with the Super Nintendo mouse that this comes with Mario Paint. It's so absurd. And I kind of want to get it just to see like how like weird they took a direction of a Jurassic Park game in.
Yeah, what the... Do you know who developed this one?
It was
a different developer than the one that did the Genesis version, which seems like a pretty straightforward way to make a game about Jurassic Park.
It was Ocean Software who developed the Super Nintendo version. The developer of the Sega version escapes me at the time, but as I was doing some research, I was researching the Sega version as well, and there's actually a lot more detail about the Sega version. Maybe it's like the more fondly remembered version of this game.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's like information like these are the lead developers, it was working at this studio, it took 15 months to develop, which at the time was a long time to develop a game. Now that's a relatively quick turnaround for any game. But they wanted to make this true to the movie adaptation of what you would think a Jurassic Park game would be like, which is not like a Zelda game. That's so weird.
Mm-hmm.
So there's basically in the Super Nintendo version a laundry list of tasks you have to complete in order to fully escape the island. There's things like you have to like go inside buildings and turn on generators, reboot the computers. At a certain point, you have to like go into a raptor's nest and kill like 18 raptor eggs, and then it all accumulates to you like reaching the helipad and a helicopter coming taking you away. So, it's.
Who do you play in it, by the way? Do they...
Grant. You play as Grant. It's just strictly the one character. Which is another thing about the Sega version, is that you play as both Grant, who's, you know, your weapon user. He's got the grenades and a couple types of tranquilizers and a taser and a rocket launcher at one point. And you're working your way through these environments, like the jungle or like the river ride, and like a utility shed kind of place, I suppose. And you're just you're not completing like any sort of heavy platforming or puzzle elements. It's just basically like move through these environments and watch out for dinosaurs who are trying to kill you. Mm-hmm. And in both versions, actually, there are absolutely no saves, which kind of makes sense for the Genesis version because it's strictly like a 7-level action game. Mm-hmm. Except, and that's the other thing about the Genesis version, is that you can play as a Velociraptor.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And he's faster, can jump higher, is a bit more mobile than Grant, but it only has short-range attacks. Mm-hmm. And the Velociraptor only has 5 stages as opposed to Grant's 7 stages. I think the Velociraptor skips like the river ride, and also there's a volcano level, which I think the Velociraptor skips. But in the Super Nintendo version, even though it's like this sort of top-down adventure game, there's no save points. And from what I was reading, it still only takes like maybe 2 to 3 hours to complete. Mm-hmm. Once you kind of know what you're doing in the game. So I think it's be an interesting thing to try. It's only $5 for a used copy on Amazon. There is one new copy available for $65 if you want to go ahead and snag that up.
How about that?
It's not on any sort of virtual console or download service, which I'm sure like the licensing for that
to
like
that from happening.
Because I don't know if Ocean Software still exists, the developer, and I think Universal owns the rights for the movies. It'd probably be a huge mess to try to secure those. Mm-hmm. Or maybe even Spielberg owns them exclusively. I don't know.
But what would be the point of going after that? Like, do you think there's a seriously genuine interest to get this game?
No, I really
like
don't.
In a virtual console.
I think I might be the only person on the planet still interested in playing this game.
Yeah.
So, and it's like we talked about at the top of the show, the Super Nintendo and Sega Genesis era of licensed games, as I was doing some research today, turned out to be like sort of like this wild west of just anyone grabbing license and license holders giving them to whoever wanted to adapt them into a game, because you have two wildly different versions of Jurassic Park. You also have two versions of Disney's Aladdin developed by completely different studios. On the Sega Genesis, it was developed by Virgin Software and actually published by Sega. Mm-hmm. And then Aladdin on the Super Nintendo was both published and developed by Capcom, who made a lot of Disney games back then. And I really don't know how these sort of things work out, because now when there's going to be a licensed game put out, the license holder will either approach or is approached by one particular studio, and then they'll build it on multiple platforms and release the same game on different systems. It'd be absurd to develop two different versions of the game to release on two different systems, unless you're thinking about like doing a specific handheld version.
Yeah, like if you want to have some kind of simplified version of it, because the technology is not the same for the two.
And usually when they do that, it is just a simplified version that's very, very similar to the like the console version of the game. But to have like one of them be a side-scrolling action game and the other being a top-down Zelda type of game, that's so far out there.
And I'm sure that at the time, like, they didn't give a they probably just saw this as just a nice additional revenue stream.
Sure.
I'm sure that the studios, and like, I'm sure Universal probably couldn't give a shit about the artistic quality of, of these 16-bit games.
There was no integrity behind those licenses.
Yeah, they're just like, give us the money.
Yeah.
Like, how quickly can you turn this around?
Oh, you're going to make a video game, one of those kids' toys? Yeah, go ahead. Do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. So Aladdin, like we mentioned before, developed by Capcom. It looks and animates pretty well.
Yeah, it does. It looks fantastic, I think.
It also keeps a very true art style to the movie. Mm-hmm. The characters are very recognizable. Also keeps very true to the movie, like 16-bit soundtrack, which is really fun.
As with most of these games, you don't really get that much actual audio from the characters themselves. You basically just hear his jumping noise, but hey, true to form. Sounds like the voice actor behind Aladdin.
Sure, yeah, it sure does. Sounds exactly like him as I remember him.
Uh-huh.
So those are, you know, those recognizable scenes, like the chase scene through Agrabah, and there's like the Donkey Kong reference where the one guy is throwing barrels at you.
Yeah.
And then actually in the Genesis version, there's a separate level in between the chase scene and then the Cave of Wonder scene where you're escaping from the actual prison where in the movie with the old guy, Jafar dressed as the old guy approaches him and propositions him to escape with him. So one of the other differences, aside from like the omitted levels, or not really omitted because they're developed by different people, different companies, But another difference between the NES version and the Super Nintendo the Super Nintendo and the Genesis, even though there was an NES version, not up for discussion this time, is that in the Genesis version, there's a sword that you can wield, and it becomes like your primary source of attacking. Whereas in the Super Nintendo, you're just jumping on guys' heads.
Oh, throwing apples.
Yeah, you're throwing apples
and they give you large quantities of apples to throw. So.
It's
more of a disable. It doesn't seem to really have much function aside from just like giving you a 1.5 second stun.
One thing that I would point out, though, is even though I feel like the combat is better in the Genesis version, the Super Nintendo version feels a lot more acrobatic.
Yeah, it feels more like a platformer. I mean, well, it's been forever since I played the Genesis version of the game, but this one feels a lot more like a platformer than, you know, trying to spend your time fighting.
Yeah, and just the way he like moves throughout the world. In both versions, there's like the little pegs that you can jump onto and swing. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, as you're jumping on to like different enemies' heads or onto different like obstacles in the way, he'll like do like hand springs and flips over stuff. So it has that very fluid feel to the way you're moving. And when you're able to execute some platforming well, it can look really cool.
Yeah. Well, and it coaches you into the right maneuvers too, where it seems to like want you to chain together a lot of jumps.
Yeah.
There's usually like, you know, some kind of some little cherry in the screen to keep you wanting to go, something up there to entice you to jump to this platform. And even if you don't see where you're going to be, at least they're planting this there so you know that it's safe to do it. The game designer wouldn't be so evil as to put it there so you have a pitfall.
that would be really evil if that was the route they chose to take.
Yeah.
So this one is about $20 used on Amazon.
It's kind of surprising.
Yeah, it is a little surprising, but I was lucky enough to inherit a copy, I suppose. So, and again, not on any sort of virtual console or download services, any legitimate ones anyway, which probably a product of the licensing. Disney, and then Capcom probably, you know, doesn't hold the Disney license anymore.
Well, I was saying earlier that the Marvel's Capcom 3 should include some characters from Aladdin because of this.
Why not?
Yeah.
Like Elephant Abu or something.
That would be great. Or maybe he just throws 100 apples. That's like Aladdin's charge, his power-up.
So, do you want to jump into...
Well, I was going to say, couple of things. This Aladdin game, it plays very smooth.
Yep.
It's got good mechanics, very, very sound when you play it. You don't feel as though it's like sloppy controls.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty simple. And it's very true to the original property.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also kind of nice how they do the cutscenes. How they actually give you a lot of the story. Like, you're pretty much told the entire movie through this. And they also use, because this is a Capcom game apparently, they decided to use the Street Fighter font. Like, whenever Street Fighter cuts to a scene, like the end scene of whoever it is the exact same font that scrolls across the bottom. So, it's a nice, nice touch. You know you're in good hands with Capcom.
It'd be interesting to compare all of Capcom's fonts. Yeah. Maybe interesting isn't the right word to use there, but yeah. It'd be kind of
It would be tedious. And a waste of time. But an interesting waste of time.
The results would be interesting to report on.
Yes. And the research itself would probably be a waste of time.
But only if the results were they used the same fucking font in every game. I think that would be the only positive result from doing that entire task.
Yeah. Also, I wanted to say, looks like there's a lot of nice little flourishes on the animation, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you get into that very first boss battle, even, you see Abu on top
of it. Oh, yeah, Abu. He's
kind of doing his little rope-a-dope boxing maneuver.
Yeah.
Just being kind of a butthole.
He's kind of a fun little sidekick throughout the game, which, you know, he never contributes, but he's always
pretty much all the time.
All right, so, do you want to talk about some Warlord?
Oh, Weapon Lord.
Weapon Lord, yes. God damn it.
And Weapon Lord is kind of like, you know, I play a lot of the 2D fighters.
Yes.
And you know the ones I like, you know the ones I don't like. I think I've talked about
Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat, right.
Pretty much. I like a lot of Street Fighter. I dislike, in general, Mortal Kombat.
So is JPEGs, man.
Yeah, for real. But there's a game that had kind of escaped me. It fell under the radar for me that I just started playing and looking into. And it's quite an intriguing game called Weapon Lord.
I had never heard of it either.
Yeah, it was originally released by Namco, although there was another studio, I think, involved in making it. But this is sort of a Western style, I guess you could say. If you think of, like, the Fatal Furies and, like the other Capcom releases that we're fond of, like Final Fight or Street Fighter, they feel like they're very Eastern in their style. And then there's, like, the Western approach, which would, I guess you would say something like Primal Rage or Mortal Kombat. And then here's Weapon Lord. And Weapon Lord kind of fits into that. The art style is a very, like, serious looking fantasy metal, I guess. You feel like you're looking at something from heavy metal.
Yeah, that's a good comparison, especially like the backdrops and all of like the really nicely like rendered backgrounds and like
it's gorgeous. Yeah.
And then there's the one stage where there's like the big skull in the background and maybe not a skull, but like some sort of a monster. Like he's like his body is buried under these piles of bones and he's like blinking and his eyes are moving around. It's a pretty cool little flourish.
Oh yeah, and there's like this stage two dragons that are like just vomiting smoke everywhere. Like it seems to be that's all that they do. I think about, like, let's talk about the actual gameplay. When I first picked it up and started playing it for the first time, there's minimal instruction. The game really doesn't coach you at all on how to play this game. But when I first picked it up, I was like, okay, this is a really stifling button masher, I guess, with oppressively difficult CPU opponents. It felt like it was a little sluggish. And that was because I didn't realize there was this entire mechanic. This whole game is built around combos, and specifically, it's not like you have punches and kicks. It's you and your weapon, and they're two distinct things. So you want to attack your opponent, but you want to get to their weapon, and if you hit their weapon, then they're going to bounce off. And the buttons themselves are just short, medium, fierce, and then forward and backwards. So you could do, like, if you're going to be on the vanguard, you'll be using forward attacks. If you're going to be in a defensive posture, you'll use the backwards attacks. And there's only six characters that you choose from. So it seems like it's kind of a small set of characters, but they're quite unique. For starters, they all have at least, from what I've seen, at least 10 special moves. Tons and tons of special moves. And they're all designed to work with these weapons as their own entities. So it's rather than like, even if you play a game like Mortal Kombat, where maybe your character has a weapon, like a fan or like a blade, that blade might as well just be a part of their body.
Right.
It doesn't really matter that it's there. Whereas Weapon Lord actually kind of makes you think about that. It makes you realize that there's a tactic to this battle where you can actually just attack their weapon if you want. And oh, by the way, it does play in a way a little bit like Street Fighter, where it's the same, you know, you hold up to jump. There's no jump button.
Mm-hmm.
You hold back to block. One of the craziest things about this is the depth of gameplay that's created with what you can do. Because aside from just like your basic attacks and your special attacks, you can do things like parrying. You have equipped shields and items that can be destroyed. You, of course, have throws. You have all kinds, like there's rolls even. A couple characters really seem to exploit rolls quite a bit.
It was one of the things that I noticed in the game, like after we played a little bit of versus mode, which I got thoroughly trounced.
Yeah.
Then you were like, oh, by the way, just try like arcade mode on the normal difficulty.
Yeah.
And a character that I had played as when we were playing versus mode, he starts executing all these moves that I had never seen. I don't think I saw him use like a single just standard attack move. It was all of these specials that he was pulling off.
Yep. And you're used to, like, say, in a Street Fighter game, or even a Mortal Kombat game, like, where you just can spam buttons and he'll keep attacking over and over again. There is that lag, which at first doesn't seem like it should be there, but it's there because, yeah, the game expects you to combo.
Yeah.
You use these opening jabs to lead into mediums that then feed into fierce attacks. And hopefully, at the same time, you're using parries and counters, you're doing cross-ups, you're coming up with all of these inventive tactics that are really gonna add so much flavor to the battles. And by the way, like I know this is the first time you played it, right?
Yeah.
So you've essentially played like five or six games of it. I've spent maybe 3 hours total playing the game. So, you know, I'm still just scratching the surface. This game looks like it is so incredibly deep.
So how did you find out about it? Was there they ever do like tournaments for this particular game? Or
No, they don't. This was a game I saw it on a list of someone made a really cool list of overlooked gems, and they did it based on different genres of gameplay. And of course, I went straight to the 2D fighters to see like what they thought were going to be, you know, kind of hidden and a little bit secretive. And this is the one that I found, and it's kind of crazy. Oh, and one thing I should have brought up earlier, okay, because this is a huge deal. This game was sort of the inception of the idea behind Soul Calibur, which is a long-running franchise, and again, all built around, what would you say? Well, obviously around weapon-based combat, but also using spacing, using counters, parries.
Having
more of a high level thinking when it comes to the way that you're going to combat your opponent and find a weakness for them. And by the way, this is
And it's another game where, and I've only ever played Soul Calibur 1 and 2, but in both of those games, just using your standard attacks and just sort of like, okay, I'm going to press a short attack and then a medium attack in succession isn't the best way to approach combat. You want to be using rolls and button combinations, like in Soul Calibur 1 specifically. If you're pressing two, like a medium button and a fierce button at the same time, you're pulling off an entirely different move, and you're using those along with the directions that you're moving your analog stick to execute combos. And there are actually really specific combos in Soul Calibur where you go to a tutorial screen and it's like, okay, do this button combination followed by this one, followed by this one. And then when you get to the fourth one, you pull off this maneuver that if you depress that button combination, like just starting at the fourth part, it wouldn't, like your move wouldn't be that.
Yeah. Well, since you bring that up, it's I guess a good time as any. There was an element of this game, from what I was reading about it, there was an element of this game that they wanted to include it, which would have been so amazingly beneficial, which is a simple tutorial. They didn't get to introduce the tutorial, so basically you go into options, you see these funky controls, and you're like, what does this all mean? Never once do they show you how to properly execute a parry or how to block. You know, you don't learn that your shield, if it gets hit enough, is eventually going to fall apart, and then you can't block with the shield anymore. They don't teach you anything. And the idea was that they were going to start with the basics and then get you all the way up to the fatalities, which, by the way, this game does have fatalities. And last time we talked about a game with fatalities, we ragged on it because it was the first
Mortal Kombat. Sure did. Deserved it.
And I still stand by every statement I made about that, which is that it's unneededly esoteric, it's pointless, and it's just a show-off at the end. It's really just a taunt that doesn't help.
Yeah.
What this does, rather than basically you kill the guy and then they stand up again and then, you know, fumble around for a few seconds while you try to pull off this combo and kill them, what this does is it just lets you finish the combo that you're already in as you're attacking this person. And if you think about, like, the Mortal Kombat fatalities, they're kind of silly. You know, you freeze a guy and then you shatter him, or, like, you turn into a fucking dragon. And
you're about his skull and spine.
Yeah, you pull out a whole Halloween skeleton out of a body. With this, it's not like that at all. It's like you take an axe, you rip it across their guts, which fall out, and then you decapitate them. Their head goes flying, and then you split the head.
And, like, there's a leg that comes off. Yeah, there's, like, full dismemberment.
It's gruesome, and it's real. That's what this... I mean, it's obviously a little bit overdone, but it's not, like, fantasy magic gratuitous death. It's gore delivered by hardcore medieval weapons.
Yeah, it's Western gore.
Have you ever seen a game as nasty as this one?
Like, no, like, and it's surprising. One of the first things you notice, like, that is red blood in this Super Nintendo game. And Mortal Kombat, which is the game that we're making the comparison to, got censored. Like, how did this slip by the censorship? Did maybe because Namco published, and Nintendo decided to be a little bit more lax with, like, developer?
This was arcade first, so maybe this was just a straight port and they didn't make the changes needed to...
I think Mortal Kombat...
But even then,
they
wouldn't let the craziness of the gore.
Yeah, how did this sneak by them? Maybe Nintendo doesn't even know this game exists.
Yeah, like I said, this is a hidden gem. This is a game that I really had not heard of, and I've heard of some really obscure fighters, but this one just doesn't come up.
You know what's also really interesting is the fact that they didn't have time to put in a tutorial. Like, were they really pressed to make their December 1993 release date?
I guess, I don't know.
They couldn't delay it? Like, they needed to make that holiday shopping season for this game that nobody bought?
Yeah, that may be a good point. I mean, because it is released around the holiday season. It seems like it's trying to...
I suppose maybe they were working with a budget and they needed to make a target release because the publisher, Namco, I suppose, in this case, didn't want to continue to pay for development. They were just like, no, go ahead and finish up what you have and let's get it out there.
Yeah. Well, and it's sort of like, you can play a game like Street Fighter and... Every time you come back to the game, I personally feel like I learned something new, even though this is a very old game. I'm like, oh, so this takes priority over this. It's like, oh, I can execute this kind of maneuver against this. And it's just something that you add to the Rolodex of knowledge when it comes to playing this character. And with this game, I wonder how you even, like, break into it. Like, how do you... They don't tell you anything about just how insanely robust and deep this gameplay is, as far as a fighter goes. how like intricate the combo system is. Like, let me go through some of these specials. Like, here's some specials. Just like this one character that I've been playing a lot of, Gentai. You hold backwards down and back, or backwards two and three, and then up, up, down, release. That's one. You know, back, down, down, back, back, B2, B3. Hold B2, B3. Back, up, back, forward, release. And it's, that's, you know, she's got a dozen of them. Like, these are ridiculous. You don't just stumble across these things.
No, you don't.
It's not like you hold back for 2 seconds, forward, and then punch.
Yeah. Like, what kind of person would sit there like, all right, I wonder what happens when I do this?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Like,
and there actually was one when I was playing as, I don't remember the name of the character, but the guy with the axe and the shield. I was playing as him, and I stumbled across this combo where he would kind of spin his axe in front of him. And the first time I did it, I was like, well, how the fuck did I do that?
Yeah.
And then I kept trying to duplicate it, and I got to a certain point where I could kind of duplicate
it. Had like a 40% success rate, but somewhere around there, maybe.
And never when I wanted to. Yeah. It was always just like, all right, stand back for a minute, let me see if I can do this. But like in combat, no, I couldn't do it.
Yeah, but no list of... I mean, I remember even if you would just like start up Street Fighter 2 World Warriors, and then you would just let it sit... they would tell you the supers, or they would tell you the special moves that they could do. Like, if you just, you know, go to the start screen and then just let it cycle through, it'll bring up all the characters, and it'll give you the basic stats about them, but then it also tells you what they can do, which is really nice. With this, you'd need a couple pages to explain just the specials.
This would be a good one for, like, GameStop to upsell. Hey, you want to buy the guide when you're buying the game?
Yeah, exactly. Maybe this game was just a little bit before its time. I don't even know if there is a time for a game like this.
Hmm.
I know there, and since then, there have been so many 2D fighters that have insanely complex combat systems. But it seems like at some point they try to explain to you how that combat system works. This one just doesn't even try. Doesn't even make the effort. So you could easily just pick this up and think it's just some clunky American, you know, meathead violent game. But it's surprisingly deep. And, you know, and like I said, I played this game for 3 hours, so I can't act like I'm the biggest fan of this in the world. I'm just really, really impressed by what I've seen so far, and I'm going to be clocking some more time on this, so...
I wonder if the impenetrability of the combat was kind of a detriment to the game. I'm wondering how it reviewed and how much people were willing to invest when reviewing the game before they just kind of took it to surface level. Because I think it'd be really easy just to mistake this game at surface level to just be that sort of a really Western focused, just violence for the sake of violence video game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm just skimming through some notes about it now. But yeah, that seems like that's a lot of what came up with the mixed reviews, where they were saying that this deep countering system and the complexity would be a turnoff to new gamers.
Mm.
Yeah, it just doesn't explain itself, which is kind of, I mean, Mortal Kombat is fucking dumb and simple as a fighting game has ever been made.
Yeah, I feel it was like, super popular.
Yeah, it was super popular. And Weapon Lord, and I kind of want to go back. We talked a little bit about how good it looks. The game looks fucking gorgeous, and it's a really unique art style.
Mm-hmm.
And I like how there's no camp. There is just no camp at all. It's like, you look at just about every single fighter game that comes out, at least certainly to this point in time, you know, it's got some cheese. It's got some silliness to it. This doesn't aspire to have any of that. It wants to be a nasty game.
And I think it does what I think Mortal Kombat... We might as well keep harping on this point. But I think it does what Mortal Kombat was trying to do better. Because it achieves that sort of...
You mean make money? It's like
the game of Mortal Kombat. Pretty sure this... Let's just talk about the artistic integrity of this game for a second.
Yeah.
The artistic integrity of this game. Mortal Kombat, and they're both going for the sort of like really gothic,
mm-hmm.
Intensely violent motifs and styles, whereas this game goes for it with like these really fine-tuned sprite work and mm-hmm. backgrounds and all that. Mortal Kombat tried to do with JPEGs.
Yeah.
And one holds up so much better than the other.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's night and day when you look at them.
Yeah.
Like, one is just clearly going to stand the test of time because it's just good artwork. And the other is just going to be these shitty snapshots of people jumping around.
Yeah. Probably the same guy.
Rendered as possible.
Probably the same guy in multiple costumes, except for it's the lady.
Yeah.
And,
even then, it's not that defined. It could just be, yeah, you never know what they did.
So any other shots you want to give to Weapon Lord before we move on?
Again, I just want to preface it by saying I am as novice as you can be about this, but as a big fan of these old school 2D fighters, this one seems to have a lot to offer. And by the way, it's not that expensive. I think I just checked earlier, it was like $18 on Amazon.
All right.
A used cartridge. This could be even on available on the Wii as well. I mean, I'm not sure, but I can't imagine there's that big of a fight over this property to, you know, Spielberg's not stepping in being like, oh, I'm going to get some Weapon Lord. Not on my watch. John Lasseter is not coming out with his fucking Hawaiian t-shirt.
All right. So, actually, let's take a quick break and then come back with Lufia and the Fortress of Doom.
All right.
Lufia and the Fortress of Doom is next up on our list. It was developed by Neverland, who also developed a sequel slash prequel to this game, Lufia 2 Rise of the Sinistrals, which also came out on the Super Nintendo, so we'll be getting to that game at some point. And Neverland also did like the Rune Factory games. Most recently, Rune Factory 4 on the 3DS, and then the develop company went bankrupt. So they got bought up by Marvelous Software, and actually the team is still intact and they're continuing to make games. I think they have a game
Rune Factory 4 on the 3DS.
Yes, indeed. And I think they do have a game announced. I can't remember quite what it is, but they have a game announced for 2015, I believe. And so yeah, they're still making games. They're still around, which is kind of a rare thing for the smaller development teams. In the Super Nintendo era, and Taito, the publisher, I don't believe they're around at all anymore. I think that they've been defunct for a while. But this game did come out in December of 1993, and it is a pretty straight-laced JRPG with a lot of really user-friendly ideas, but it seems like for every really good idea they have, they manage to fuck something really simple up.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, so... And actually, I wanted to start with the opening of this game, because it has a really strong opening. So, it's kind of like Metroid-y in the way that it opens up, because you open up with this party and you're in a dungeon area, and your entire party is like level 70 to 80. You're like at the closure of an RPG. You're going through this dungeon, and there's of course random battles, which are a relic of the NES days that refused to go away in the 16-bit era and still refuses to go away in a lot of games. And You're moving through this dungeon, and you know there's like treasure chests to pick up, random battles, and you're like really stocked with all sorts of items to restore your health and your MP. So it puts you into this area where you're just free to explore the four characters and what they're able to do in terms of like their physical prowess and all their magic abilities. And you can like experiment in battle. You can just use up all your MP and just restore it all with an MP restore potion. And it really gives you a great idea of how these characters work. You know, you have like your straight brawler character who knows no magic. You have your sort of two mage characters, which are kind of balanced between different types of magic. You have offensive magic with each one. One of them's more proficient with healing magic, and then the other has a lot of like stat decreasing and stat increasing magic, so you can put like extra defense on your characters or decrease your opponent's magic defense, that kind of stuff. And then you have your more like balanced warrior character who knows a little bit of restorative magic but is also mainly there for offensive capabilities,
like a backup healer.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And then you reach this point where you defeat these four boss characters, and then it starts the game entirely over, not as these four characters, but like flash forwards 100 years, and then you started this character, you're level one, you're in this little town, and it gives you this really cool idea of where you're headed and
where you can go with this. That's pretty cool.
Right. And then also gives you this introduction to how you're using magic and how you're managing your resources. So one thing that they could have done that would kind of really halted your progress here is they could have made it to where you like are struggling against your first enemies, you're having a hard time moving throughout the beginning of the game, but they really do ease you into being this really inept fighter at the beginning, where you're still killing enemies in just a hit or two. You level up very quickly. It feels like you start to progress really quickly, which is a really great way to design the game, especially once you've been stripped of all of these amazing magic spells and things, where like, all right, you're this little shrimp now, but the enemies aren't so bad either. And
so you were inept and now you're struggling to become ept.
Right. Thank you for that. No one's going to understand that. And the game does a lot of things that really keep the game moving forward really well, which is, I'll touch on them as they come up. But one of the really cool things, just as a quick side note here, is that as you're leveling up, you're learning new spells. At the end of every battle, you're getting like this progress screen of this is how much experience you gained, this is how much you had before the battle, this is how much you have after the battle, and this is how much gold you have now.
Yeah.
So it really saves a lot of time of just...
It's fantastic battle metrics that they just give you.
Yeah.
Right off the bat.
Yeah, and a lot of times in RPGs, after a couple battles, I'm always like opening up the menu, seeing which character is going to level up next, how much money I have, and doing like that sort of resource management stuff. But in this game, just right there at the end of every battle, here's a quick screen. This is where you are now. A lot of times, I'm not even reading most of it. I'm just kind of getting a quick glance at the numbers, and I know like by their position what they mean. I'm like, great, all right, moving on with the rest of it.
Well, you don't need to know. Like, I mean, there was, from when I was watching you play, I think your characters were like around level 17, 18.
Yeah.
And they said that Lufia needs 2,700 experience, and then your net haul from the last battle was 380. So you're like eight battles away from leveling. That's simple math you can just do for yourself. Oh, by the way, the EXP payout's fantastic, it looks like.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
Lots of gold. You said that
really
healing your entire team is 60 gold.
Yeah.
And you have 40K.
Yes.
So, that's nice.
I mean, that was the most expensive inn I had come across. And the inns are very progressive in the way that they upgrade their prices. Like, the first town you start in is like 5 gold.
Mm-hmm.
And enemies are netting you like 60 to 100 gold. So, and then by that point, like, I'm netting 300-400 gold and like the price is 60. Okay. So...
Oh, one of the things
that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, and stop me if you want to stay on any specific topic here, because you seem to have fallen in love with this game. And it looks amazing.
I will just say real quick that innkeepers, have just a really shit profession. If they just went outside and killed a frog, they would make more than they do in a week.
That's true. Yeah, well, hey, maybe they're not in it for the money. Maybe they're just in it for the steady town living and not having to fight, zombies.
Yeah, maybe.
And rose bushes at the same time. the thing that I like a lot about this is the way that they approach the random encounters that you get when you're just kind of wandering around the world map. Because it feels like a lot like a Final Fantasy game.
Right? Yeah.
But rather than going to, changing screen into battle mode, where you now have this background and you have your characters and you're trying to, line them all up, it just tells you the three that pop up, and if it's a significant battle, I'm guessing they're going to, if it's a story battle, it's going to look a little different.
No, actually, I think that there are a couple of boss battles that I've run into where the background changes a little bit.
They stage it a little, I guess?
Yeah, a little bit, but for the most part, every battle that that quickly comes to mind, no matter where the location was, it's always just been the kind of backdrop, the world map, or the town, or cave that you're in kind of fades out a little bit. You see your characters down at the bottom, and then the enemy characters up top, and they don't bother with these other sort of battle screens. It's just like, hey, here's your enemies, get down to business.
Mm-hmm. Is that something you turned off, by the way?
No.
Like, I'm trying to think of, some other RPGs where it's like the guy has a crossbow and he just flings a bunch of arrows when he shoots, but really it's just they just show like this slash move
hmm.
across the enemy to indicate who's it. Or, like, if it's a magic yeah. attack, they'll have, like, a little burst or something.
Yeah, yeah. There's a couple of, like, little animations for magical attacks, and, you know, they'll... Like,
I'm not saying it's a detriment to the game, if anything. It's just... It's efficient.
Yeah, it's very streamlined. The way that, you know, you don't have to deal with, like, the half a second load from, like, a battle screen to a world map screen. It's just automatically back.
Well, to get the same cave, too. I mean, like, you see the same cave over and over again. There comes a point where maybe you don't need to load
yeah.
the whole thing just right. to give me this quick churn of a battle. I want to just get through this thing.
Right. So, well, like you mentioned before, you can when you're in an encounter, there's usually a good number of enemies there. They sort of supplement, like, the difficulty of your enemies, which, you know, if you're leveling appropriately, which isn't hard. There's not a whole lot of grinding in the game. If you're leveling appropriately, it doesn't take much to kill any of the enemies. So they kind of address the balance of difficulty there by throwing a lot of enemies on the screen. I think I've seen as many as six, but, you know, 3, 4, 5 is usually the general amount of enemies they'll throw at you at one time.
Are there attack alls?
Yeah, there are certain spells that are attack alls, mm-hmm. and they cost more MP, which, you know, your basic, like, lightning spell, which is actually pretty efficient, especially toward the beginning of the game. Like, when you're entering a new area with Lufia, who's your kind of your mage character, she's decent with melee attacks, but until you've bought the most recent or the next upgrade for her weapons, she might not be killing enemies in one hit. So if you just zap someone with some lightning, it does a pretty good job. I forgot where I was going with that. What was your question?
That was my question. I don't know. I was really just talking about the way the battle mechanics operate. Compared to what you're seeing from, like, you know, those traditional Square games.
But yeah, well, the battles, they're also very quickly over because usually you're just strong enough to mow your way through or to use some magic if you're in a new area to mow your way through.
And well, it seems like you're pretty over-leveled for where you are because they barely scratch you when they actually do get a hit off.
Well,
I've noticed a lot of them are one-turn KOs.
I did get a little stuck at a certain point. So here's one of the more user-unfriendly aspects of the game is the sort of inventory system, mm-hmm. if you can call it a system. It's basically just pages where items stack on top of each other. You can rearrange them, but that's not in the item screen. That's in a completely different, like, menu option, where the option is actually menu. Mm-hmm. And it's not where you can, like, you can configure some stuff there about the game, but it's also where you can rearrange your magic spells if you want to put different spells in a different order or your items.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just basically a swap. So if you have...
It's very cluttered, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just basically a giant list of everything.
And there's no auto-sort, mm-hmm. which is annoying. But as I was going through the game, enemies will drop items like potions, or, like, if you're fighting a newt, it'll drop, like, newt jerky, and that's, like, a health restorative item. Occasionally they would drop things like arrows, which I started using at the beginning of the game, and it's just like a disposable item. Like, apparently you just, like, throw the arrow at the enemy. Yeah. I guess is how it works.
Well, you said there's, like, what, short, medium, and large arrows?
Like, yeah, there's, like there's arrows, there's medium arrows, and, like, high arrows, I think is how the ranking goes.
Mm.
And I was using the arrows. I used the regular arrows and then the medium arrows a little bit, and they really weren't doing much more damage compared to just my physical melee damage. So I was like, you know what, these items are completely disposable. They're useless to me. I'm just going to sell and make a little bit more quick cash.
Mm-hmm.
And then I encountered a boss, and it was the first boss I really had difficulty with. It's a boss who's in a tower. You're supposed to go talk to him, and he's, like, going to tell you where to find this other guy. There's a lot of that, actually, in this game, like, these really contrived narrative elements where, like, go to this town and talk to this guy. He'll tell you what to do next. And then that guy would, like, oh, you're looking for this guy. I can show you where he is. And then you go talk to another guy. And just, like, this series of having to have these conversations with people in other towns.
Mm.
And what happened was I had to make my way to this tower to find this guy to talk to. I talked to him. He's like, okay, I have the information you need, but before I give it to you, let's fight. Yeah. And I'll see if you're worth talking to, basically.
And not your team, you.
Yes, one-on-one with, of course, my main character, John, because the name of my main character is John.
I was going to ask who the hero is.
that's me. I'm the hero. And it was this fight that, at first, I thought was supposed to be a scripted loss. So, because there's already one of those in the game, it's a RPG trope, like the beginning of RPGs where you just have this battle where it's just, you're supposed to lose. So I was still trying to put a little bit of effort into it, just in case it wasn't supposed to be a scripted loss. So I'm doing my regular attacks. They're not doing too much damage. He casts spells where he'll like up his speed, and just as this another side note, your speed, your agility is actually a pretty important stat because it's not like a pure turn-taking battle. It is determined by your speed, but it's not like you move and then your enemies all get to move, and then you input more commands, you get to move, your enemy gets to move, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Your speed actually does come into play when you could choose all of your commands, all of your characters attack, and if you're fast enough, you would actually get to input more commands before your enemies get to move.
Okay.
So I mean, it makes like having to backtrack to other towns, which I haven't had to do actually, but if I had to do that, if that was a requirement of the game, it would have made fighting these random battles against enemies I'd already seen easier, because they could
get those cheap hits in.
Right, and they could like throw six of them at me, but I'm fast enough to just kill them all.
Are there like decay or poison mechanics at all? Like, can you be poison your characters where they slowly lose health?
Yes. Actually, yeah, there's those sort of status ailments. I haven't really run into them too much yet, but I do have like curative magic for those type of things, and there's like antidotes that are sold in stores and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It's not something to where
I could see that
it happens a whole
if
lot.
If that were the case, I could see that being a frustrating scenario where it's,
yeah,
you know.
And actually, another quick side note, in Pokemon Alpha Sapphire Omega Ruby,
mm-hmm,
did you notice that when your Pokemon gets poisoned, it doesn't get hurt while you walk?
I know, that's really nice.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. Good for them for... Because it doesn't make sense. Why would it get poisoned while it's in the Pokeball?
That's true.
That's ridiculous.
Also, did you know, 45 minutes into this, I have not made one Pokemon reference.
Yeah,
how about that?
That one's on me.
That one's on you.
Yep.
Oh man, we got so much shit to talk about.
So, God, where was I? All right, so I'm up in this tower. I think it's a scripted loss. So I'm fighting him. He's increasing his speed. I'm just kind of hacking away at him. I'm trying some magic spells. I'm using magic to restore my health. Eventually, he just gets me.
Yeah.
And then goes to a game over screen. Like, all right, I'm supposed to beat this guy. I didn't want to have to crawl back up there, like do some level grinding, crawl back up the tower, and, you know, just to get my butt kicked again. So I looked up an FAQ.
Hmm.
And what does this FAQ tell me?
Arrows.
Arrows. Arrows are the best way to kill this guy. And I was like, God damn it. So I start poking around. I go to a town, see if I can buy some arrows. I can't. I go to a previous town. Well, first of all, I tried to like advance in the game to go to like the next town to see if maybe the next town has some nice arrows that I can buy. The next town that you get to doesn't have jack shit in it. It's got an inn, it's got a sick girl in a bed, and it's got some grandma telling you that the girl is sick. Great. No shop, no save point, no nothing. Mm-hmm. Time to backtrack again. So I backtracked all the way to a town previous to the one I was at when I had to go to the tower, and tried to find some arrows to buy there. Couldn't find a goddamn arrow to save my life. So I was like, bombs. Bombs would be great. Bombs are items that explode, probably more effective than an arrow. Bought 40 of them. It only cost me 4,000 gold, mind you, which was nothing to me. It was like 10% of my total funds. Then I go back to the town, which I guess I'm supposed to be at in the story here.
Uh-huh.
Save. Climb back up the tower, fight him. First thing I do, throw a bomb at him, does 17 damage. Does jack shit. Yep. Now I'm camping on 40 bombs that I can't do anything with.
There's probably going to come a point later on where you can get some mileage out of those bombs.
I mean, maybe there's like one boss who's at the bottom of a cave who's weak to only bombs.
Mm-hmm.
But at that point, I had leveled up maybe 3 or 4 times, and that turned out to be enough to where he would increase his agility, but he wasn't really able to get multiple moves in on me like
that was
before.
What he was doing. He was just like, yeah, he was lapping you over and over again with attacks.
Right, he was stacking moves on me. And then I had some magic, and I got the bright idea, well, you know, if he's not able to get multiple hits on me, let me just decrease his defense.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to decrease his defense a couple of times, actually do some decent damage with my regular melee attacks on him, and get through the battle with only using maybe 1 or 2 high potions, which was great.
Nice.
The moral of the story is, yeah, I guess I was
a little overwhelmed. Hang on to 5 arrows.
Yeah, it's just...
If the game gives you 50 arrows, sell 45 of them.
Right. So,
I have a couple of questions, actually.
Yeah, please.
One of the things that's kind of interesting is the stat breakdown of each character.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, you probably know a bit better than I do, like, It seems like there's obvious, like, attack, defense, special defense, that sort of stuff. Agility.
Yeah, your agility, your intelligence, like, I suppose is just your magic defense, strength, defense, and then the weird one that's STR, which you would think strength, but why would they have attack and strength as two different stats? Why would...
Were you saying, like, special resistance or something?
Maybe. That was, or status resistance.
Yes. Oh, that would make more sense, yeah.
Which makes sense to me. I really haven't run into a whole lot of instances where it's like your entire party has been poisoned except for this guy who has the best status resistance. So it's hard to tell, and I don't have a manual. So
yeah. Is that like AP, HP, if you just want to look at the characters, you can kind of see who's got what? Does that vary, or is it pretty much the same health?
No, the HP varies, and...
Well, because it sounds like it has the traditional shape of, like, tanky characters versus mage characters.
Yeah, it's a little bit... There is that character specialization, those kind of locked classes, but it's a little bit more loose than, I suppose, like, something like Final Fantasy IX or Final Fantasy IV, where you have, like, your two mage characters and not really good for anything except casting magic. Mm-hmm. In this one, Lufia is kind of the main magic caster that I have right now. And as I'm going through different areas, you know, as soon as she gains one or two levels, she does just fine killing enemies in one hit with her physical attacks. Mm-hmm. So it's not like if I'm not casting magic, I'm just defending her.
She wouldn't be functional in a battle or anything. You can still make some use out of it.
Which, you know, and you can actually make really liberal use of your magic in this game. Lufia, for example, I think has like 120 MP. One, like, of her basic lightning spell costs 2.
Wow.
Yeah. So I could, like, go through significant chunks of the game with her just casting
Does
magic.
Does the game really expect you to be out there that long? Like, do they expect you to just be in the woods fighting and doing stuff before you can heal up?
I don't think so. There doesn't seem to be really long stretches of the world where...
So do you feel like the game's, like, kind of on easy mode for you? Or, like, do you feel as though you're not being... Well, you had that one boss battle, which was just sort of an annoying item.
Right.
But beyond that, the game doesn't really seem to be challenging you all that much.
No, not... There's not really a significant amount of challenge to it. And, like, in terms of, like, the resource management, especially, like, your MP, and there really hasn't been a whole lot of times where I'm just kind of desperate to get to the next town and, like, depleting all of my potions and stuff trying to get there.
Well, we talked about it earlier, because, I mean, to bring up Pokemon, I guess, but, like, you know, we have repels.
Yeah.
So if we're really in sore shape and we just can't fight anymore, we use repels. Like, is there an equivalent in this game for that?
Yeah, they do have... I think it's called like a stagnant water. Like there's sweet water, and that will actually increase your likelihood of encounters. Mm-hmm. And then there's like foul water, I think it's called, and that will decrease your encounter rate. But you know, I don't know that the game is really out to challenge me. Mm-hmm. Like it's just a really easily paced, not like easy to the point where it's uninteresting, because the characters do grow so quickly, so I'm always like learning new skills and things to try out, new magic spells. But I think that just the fact that it's designed to keep pulling you forward makes it like not really that noticeable that I'm not challenged by the game. So things like the world is constructed, to get back to what you're saying about space between towns. You get to the next town relatively quickly, and there's not really a whole lot to wander around and look at. There's the world is kind of constructed where you don't get like this huge overworld view of the map, but you pretty much have a path set for you by just the basic geography of the game. Like there's oceans on both sides of you, or there's like a river or like a mountain range you can't pass over. So you're just kind of guided by the geography to your next step.
Well, they actually had pretty well laid out. Like there would be, you know, say an island that you're on with some trees, like a foresty area, and also some rocky mountain areas that you could walk across. Does that change the encounters that happen if you're on top of the rocks as opposed to on top of the grass?
Not that I've noticed.
I wasn't sure if there's like an item harvesting element to the game.
No, as far as I've noticed, there's not really a way to guarantee certain encounters. There are enemies that are more prone to drop things. Apparently enemies at the beginning part of the game are more prone to dropping arrows. Yeah. But like certain enemies will drop potions, so you know you could do some item farming that way.
Pretty ridiculous the number of item slots each character has. It's like 6 total, right?
Yeah, you get like your weapon, your helmet, your armor. You can equip a shield, shoes, and accessory.
Yeah,
and accessories are actually something you can't buy in stores. Accessories you can only find In treasure chests, like in caves and stuff, like as you're like adventuring throughout the game, you can find treasure chests that have rings or something in it.
Yeah.
So let me just.
So what are Sinistrals? Is that something that's come up in the story?
Sinistrals are actually at the beginning of the game when you have that sort of Metroid section where you're completely like self-actualized characters. You know everything. You can do everything. Sinistrals are like evil spirits, sort of like elemental forces that got released upon the world. And the four characters you are in the beginning are four warriors who are sent to defeat them.
Mm.
And the Sinistrals, of course, at the beginning of the game, are defeated by you as you're playing through that section. And then through a series of really brief events at the actual beginning of the game, where you take over as your main hero character, you come to find out that at least one of them has come back. You're in this scripted battle with him where you're forced to lose.
Mm, okay.
So, and then that really becomes the driving force of the game is, hey, so far, for me, like, hey, that Sinistral is back. We should go find him so that we can find out if the rest are back, and if they are, kill them.
I see.
And that's been the main objective so far, which I also think contributes to like that really like thin narrative contributes to like the overall really brisk nature of the way the game is paced. It's just been about like, this is your overarching goal. Go see if that guy knows anything. Go see if that guy knows anything, which again is really an artificial way of progressing in a narrative. But I mean, I'm not really too interested in the narrative, so I don't really care about the artificiality of it. So, I briskly look through my notes here. The game looks fine. It's not it's not anything super special, but you know, there's nothing really objectionable about it either.
Yeah, no. It's not the prettiest girl at the cotillion, but hey, it's doing everything it needs to do.
Right. So the soundtrack, I'm not impressed with so far.
Bleeps and blorps.
Well, just the music, actually. Oh. The bleeps, I don't really care about those, but like the music is a little bit repetitive. None of the melodies are really all that catching. So I think after the first like 30 or 45 minutes, I just kind of muted the soundtrack. It's like, yeah, I've heard all I need to hear of this. Time to turn on a podcast or something. And, for like a first effort from Neverland, this is the first game. It turned out to be a really solid game so far.
This is actually something I was about to bring up. They have five titles that they released on Super Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
Neverland. The two of them are Japan only, and they're both RPGs. Especially this Energy Breaker. It's an action RPG. Sounds like a hell of a lot of fun.
Hmm.
The other one, of course,
that's how you name a game right there. Yeah. Energy Breaker.
Well, there's Lufia and the Fortress of Doom.
Yep,
which obviously we're talking about. Lufia 2 is Rise of the Sinistrals.
Yeah, those are the... that's the prequel. Like, the sequel prequel.
One of these things is not like the other. Hat Trick Hero 2.
Hmm.
Which is a soccer game.
Yeah.
So, that's the...
Of course.
Yeah, they did that. They also did one for the Game Boy Color. They did Lufia The Legend Returns.
Yes.
So, they carried that into... And they're like all over the place. This is really cool.
And then
they're on Game Boy Advance. They're on Wii, DS, 3DS...
And then they also remade Lufia 2 on the DS, which apparently was not a good remake at all, because they kind of remade it as an action RPG,
mm-hmm.
which I guess is against the...
So how old is this company? This company is founded May 7th, 1993.
They founded it in May of 93.
Whoa.
In December of 93, they released their first game. Turned out to be a pretty good one.
How about that? That's really impressive. How much does this cost?
I paid $40.
Mm.
It ain't cheap.
Well, I mean, I've noticed the market for RPGs when it comes to the Super Nintendo, especially top shelf Super Nintendo games, mm-hmm. is absurd.
Yeah.
It's really absurd.
Especially when you get into like the rare and the late Super Nintendo RPGs, things like mm-hmm. Chrono Trigger and Earthbound, of course.
Isn't even like Mario RPG pretty expensive?
Yeah, Mario RPG is pretty pricey.
Mm-hmm.
At least that one has like a virtual console release, so it came out on the Wii Virtual Console. Lufia has not. This one is actually not available on any other legitimate download services at all. The only or like a re-release or a remake or something. This is only
so
available
because this whole company seems to operate hand in hand with Nintendo.
Yeah,
like they're all over their platforms.
Mm-hmm. So, any other points you want to hit on before we close this out?
We talked about this a while. It seems like you have very glowing recommendation of this game.
Yeah, I'm actually really liking it. I don't think I touched too much on...
You said the music sucks. You got to give us some more negatives, if they exist.
The narrative is small in scope if you kind of care about that kind of thing. We talked about the item reorganization. In the battles, the one detriment in the battle is it's group based. And
you showed me in action how this sucks. Yes.
Yeah, and it's tough to describe, but right now I have three playable characters. And if there's like a group of two rats and three goblins, and I just spam the attack button and all three of my characters attack the two rats, if the first two characters kill the rats, the third character, rather than diverting their attack to the goblins, will just miss.
Hits the air.
Swings at nothing. And the attack, is rendered useless. Hmm. So it's a really strange thing, especially in an RPG that's menu-based, to be that user-unfriendly. But again, most of the battles, once you kind of get acclimated to the next area that you're in, aren't difficult enough to where it matters a whole lot. I think, like, the battle I even showed you, I, like, maybe took 6 damage that entire battle, even though one of my characters left. Yeah. So... There is that.
That's a scenario you probably don't encounter all that frequently. It's just the sort of thing that,
The battles are usually pretty quick anyway, like 15, 20, maybe 30 seconds, and you're done with it. So
that's what makes the grind so easy, I feel like.
Yeah.
I mean, because like I was talking about earlier with that Lufa character, it's like you're getting 12% of the necessary experience to level.
Yep.
And you could just churn those battles out in 20 seconds. So in a few minutes, you're basically leveling.
And if you use a couple of the Sweetwaters, the encounter rate increasers, every step or two, you're getting into a battle, you churn your way through it, and then you're done. You're moving on with your life. Mm-hmm. So, the only time that it's really kind of a bummer that the attacks really whiff is when you encounter three enemies of different types. Because in that case, you'll have to, map different attacks to each enemy. And it does kind of make you consider which enemies are, have more HP, the stronger ones.
Well, can't you just pray for rain? Have somebody cast an attack that kills everything, or attacks everything?
You could. The particular spell that I know that does a sort of, explosive damage to all enemies is a bit slower. So at my current level... my two melee characters actually get off two attacks before she's able to cast that spell. So,
yeah,
that's the reverse of that particular strategy. So, on that note, I think we'll close it out for this week.
I mean, have you done the research? What's next?
Next up, me and Wes are actually getting together in a couple of days, which you're, of course, welcome to join. I'll keep you posted on about when it's happening. Mm-hmm. Is the official show where we're going to break down a little bit of news and talk about some of the new games that came out this month.
Oh, can I? I wanted to say, I listened to your episode where you were just giving your State of the Union address.
Oh, God, my hour long. Like, I planned on being 20 minutes and I ranted for an hour.
It was great. It was a great listen.
Well, thank you. I was bone dry at the end of it.
Yeah, well, the thing that stuck out the most is your observation about Nintendo having a hard time attracting studios to making games for them or to release through their own console. That they're kind of leaning on the same properties they've always leaned on.
Yeah.
Mario, Kirby, Brawl games, things like that.
Donkey Kong, Zelda. Yeah.
I mean, what do they have to do? Like, what's the holdup there? Is it because they're software is so far removed from all of the other gaming consoles that it's hard to port?
Yes. It's at this point...
I mean, because like you also said, there's another point you brought up, and not to stray from it, but you also said that they don't seem to be trying to market that much, the new hardware.
Yeah, I think they kind of stumbled out of the gate with the Wii U. I think they're counting on some of the momentum of the Wii carrying over to where... people would just kind of realize, a Wii with an extra letter attached to it. This must be something new. I must have it. Mm-hmm. And that didn't really work out the way they planned. And then I think they had a hard time figuring out who they wanted to market to. Mm-hmm. So there hasn't really been a huge, significant marketing push behind the system. And I think at this point, maybe they're okay with the system just being what it is. And that's a dedicated system for people who like Nintendo games, who buy a lot of Nintendo games, and they're just counting on making a lot of money selling games to their core audience. Mm-hmm. And that's generally how Nintendo system works, kind of bringing it around to your other point, why other companies have a hard time bringing games over.
Oh, because they don't get the gold? They don't get the candy?
It's a general trend that non-Nintendo games don't sell all that well. There are a couple of exceptions, like I mentioned on the other show. Resident Evil usually does fairly well. Square Enix games usually do pretty well.
But your observation on the Resident Evil game was kind of surprising, because wasn't it a remake of an older version that they never even, that was originally on GameCube, right? Or yeah, they never even gave back to Nintendo. That's a snub, that's a slap in the face.
Fucking Capcom pisses me off so much.
Oh man.
And
I'm a huge Resident Evil fan too.
I really like everything Resident Evil 4 and before, but I don't really care for the newer Capcom games.
No, when I say I'm a huge fan, it's basically because of the first three games.
Right.
Like, I love them in the 90s. They were amazing.
And like the remake on the GameCube was so good.
Oh yeah.
And
well, they did the Resident Evil 2 that they remade, where they actually, it's a rail shooter.
Oh, that was on the Wii.
Oh my god.
Dark Side Chronicles.
Because I clocked so much time playing that game that I knew the backgrounds in and out because they're so detailed.
Yeah.
And to see it in that format as a rail shooter, it's like they put the 3D elements, everything that you saw. Like, you get to go into the gun shop, you know, you get to explore, the Raccoon City, the police headquarters, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. I don't know. That's tangent. But
and yet, to me, it's just bizarre that they would snub Nintendo and Nintendo fans who have supported their games.
Yeah.
And I'm not pleased with Capcom.
Well, and another thing I wanted to bring up, you gave me so much food for thought. I don't know why I'm tacking all of this on to the very end of the episode. I feel like we're trying to close out, but not quite.
Yeah, that's all right. Let's go.
You made a great observation about the DS on how a lot of the games felt obliged to service both screens.
Mm-hmm.
And the games that do it best are the ones that use it the way the Wii U does, like as sort of like an inventory management while you're working. Mm-hmm. You can do it all on that device if you want to, but you can also work with the TV and have it sort of be a background thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the games that I think function the best, like we were talking about the Advance Wars games, they don't make you use both screens. They just find a nice way to have one be your action and then one just be the representation of action.
Because I think that it gets undervalued, like how annoying it is to have to open up a totally like separate screen mm-hmm. and to look through menus or to flip through one or two screens in order to find the information you want. Whereas with the DS systems and the Wii U, it's just right there.
Yeah.
And I think that, and like it's kind of like going back to Lufia, how like at the end of the battle they have that screen, like here's the information you want, let's get on with the game. Just being able to have it that quickly accessible, it is a really like huge benefit to having that second screen. And I think that that function of the second screen as just sort of like a quick way to manage information is undervalued, and using the second screen in new and creative ways is a bit overvalued.
Yeah. Like, why do you don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah.
Just because it's there doesn't mean you have to like implement it in this amazing way. Just use it in the workman-like form that it would be best at.
Right.
Like you say, giving you information.
Right. Because it's so crucial to so many games, like especially like RPGs and like action games where you have to do like a lot of info and ammo management. It's great to have it easily accessible. Mm-hmm. So after the official show,
okay,
is the Pokemon show, and we've actually already got one in the bank. We could add to it if you have more you want to talk about, or we'll just go ahead and post that one and call it a day.
When you say, is it our Nuzlocke? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Okay.
This is the next part of our Nuzlocke.
I feel like there's a lot of stuff. I just now actually crossed the finish line in my current playthrough of Alpha Sapphire.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So I've gotten into the post game stuff. I feel like there's a ton of stuff to talk about if you want to.
Yeah,
you can
sure.
always get more Pokemon.
I'm down for it. How would you feel, maybe not necessarily this next show, but how would you feel about getting back into some rankings now that we can include
sixth
generation?
What would you have in mind?
I think I
just
might
the
just...
Sixth gen? Just the sixth gen Pokemon?
Let's just do it all again. Let's just fucking churn through them all, and it's going to piss Wes off, but it's going to be so good. Because I'm thinking, like, we go back, and I'll check out the order that we had them in. Because I think we did fire first and then electric, something like that. And we'll go back and do them in the same order we did them in. But I think I'm also going to do my rankings, and then after I have mine complete, make note of where me and Wes had them ranked before and see how much they've shifted.
Mm-hmm.
Just to see how much our opinions have shifted in the last year and a half on certain Pokemon.
Well, if fire is the first type to be done, and my top three will include a sixth gen Pokemon.
Which one?
You gotta guess. I mean, come on. It's the best function of the very first bird you encounter ever.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Oh, my God, the thing is amazing.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing.
Flame body. Catch the eggs. Fly around everywhere. It's amazing.
That'd be an interesting thing to take into account, I guess, if we're just going to go down
the absolute best.
But just how
first bird you get.
How good of, like, just a utility Pokemon it is. And
I mean, that factors in for me. I mean, it's great if you're a hoss in battle, but, I mean, I want you to be functional outside of it, too.
Yeah, see, I'm not a huge fan of Talonflame in battle. He's got a glaring weakness to rock. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Let's close out the show.
Yeah, that's what...
So, till next time, everybody.
All right, later.